coming down to the 16th bowl. Catholic Boy is pulling away. He's so impressive today, the others didn't even have a prayer. Catholic Boy rolls in the run. Happy Travers.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Race the Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Wednesday morning, kicking off week number three up here at Saratoga. We are live from the backstretch, as we have been through the entire meet, and will continue to be bringing you the action from Saratoga in during a season where you can't be here, unfortunately, at least at this point. And I'm thinking it's looking that way for the foreseeable future for the meet. But hopefully we're bringing a little of the track to you also with our events up here, the watch parties around town. We're doing the OTB live. So hopefully through the network you get a sense of being up here at the track. And we'll try to do that some more this morning with a little bit later visit our friend Tom Amello. I visited him yesterday afternoon across the street at his bed and breakfast, the Brunswick. We talked a little bit about that, but also talked some horse racing with Tom. Tom is also doing a blog for the CapitalOTB.com website throughout the meet, looking at some of the weekend stakes action. So we talked a little bit about all of that with Tom. That'll come up a little bit later on. Also, a tape piece this summer, Gary Contessa, retired trainer Gary Contessa, has shifted over to help us this summer and do some remote interviews, and we're going to kick that off this morning. He a few days ago visited, I believe, in their living room with Maggie and Tom Morley, so that'll come up a little bit later in the show as well. But we're going to kick things off as we normally do on a Wednesday with a jump race looking us straight in the face. Tom Law from the Saratoga Special. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Seth. How are you today?
Very good. Happy to have you on board to talk some of the jump racing today. But before we do that, let's go back, get your thoughts on last week. We'll watch the stretch run of the Smithwick. We talked about this one. I took a little pop with Moscato, and Moscato's going to be the number five horse and get up late over Optimus Prime. And I was a little bit surprised Moscato wound up to be the favorite. The betting public tilted in that direction too. Slight favorite over Optimus Prime. But Optimus Prime, the three, gets caught again late by Moscato. You can't really take anything away from Optimus Prime in that he'd been away so long. I thought it was a good performance by both of the top two.
Absolutely. The first two ran lights out in here. Optimus Prime, like you said, hadn't run in a long, long time. His rider made kind of a decisive move to go to the lead and try to take the field through the stretch, going through the wing. But Moscato, you know, maybe had the benefit of a little recency.
Yeah.
He had run. Jack Fisher always does a great job. He's pretty much one of Jack's best jumpers, if not his best jumper that he has in his barn this year. So, you know, the race went true to form. Sean Clancy's River D horse, Jibber Farrell, got up for third. So that was a nice placing for Sean in third. But the first two were very strong. Look forward to maybe those two coming back later on in the Turf Riders, along with Jack said after the race that he'd probably run Snap Decision in there as well.
Oh, so makes sense. The Snap Decision looked great.
Yeah, it gives him a pretty strong entry for that race later in the meet, still several weeks away, but down the road.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Again, it was the first couple of days of jump racing that went very well with some nice performances, again, going back to Snap Decision the day before. All right, let's get some thoughts on this afternoon's jump race. As is typical up here, it will open up the action, an allowance, non-winners of two lifetime, 2 1/16 over the grass, over the jumps. I took a little pop with Anticipating. It's my man Jonathan Shepherd, finished third in the seasonal debut behind Galloway Kid, who ran nicely against Snap Decision last week. I have Fast Car underneath for Jack Fisher. I think this one may be primed in the third spot to continue what we saw last time in the Maiden Breaker. But I pulled up the replay from the seasonal debut from Critical Data. We'll take a look at that and let people see this one. I may regret putting this one in the third spot, and I think this will take a lot of the betting action. This was essentially the debut over the jumps. And there is kind of some back class on the flat side, and that's always important with these jumpers. So I think Critical Data will take some action. As I say, I may regret putting this one down in the third spot, but My man Shepard, I put that one on top, anticipating. How'd you see the race?
So you and I are on the same horse. I actually picked Jonathan Shepard as well, anticipating. Of course, he's run several times over the hurdles. Shows a good race last time out, like you said. Maybe might be the key race. We don't have a huge sample of jump races this year, so we'll go with maybe what we have. Galway Kid, of course, ran a good race to snap decision here opening week. He's had a run, you know. Jonathan Shepard, he can't let Jack Fisher win them all. Of course, Jonathan used to be the king of these. He's in the Hall of Fame for good reason. Of course, you know, and the horse is one going 2 3/8 miles, so the distance isn't a problem. He's got pretty decent flat form as well. You mentioned the flat form of Critical Data, who I picked second in here. You know, most people believe that he was the most impressive maiden winner of the spring, sort of abbreviated spring season. Again, not a lot of sample size, but, you know, he was pretty strong in that race. You know, and I'm a little worried about the racetrack setting. You know, horses that are kind of strong and right up on the pace in those races, when they get over here to the racetrack setting, they tend to be a little bit strong as well. You know, so, but he does have really good flat form. I mean, he's just out of placing in a couple Grade 3 stakes, Virginia Derby and the Kent stakes, with Richard Valentine training him. So Richard trained him all along. Richard still trains him. So he doesn't really have that transition where he went from, you know, useful flat horse, or maybe, you know, not such a good flat horse, to a jump trainer, and they got to kind of figure him out. Richard knows the horse. He's had the horse all along. So he could be tough. I've talked a lot about my second pick. I think Critical Data may end up being the favorite. You mentioned.
You sound like you're right, my camp. I may regret after the race putting Critical Data down there, but you know, Shepard, I just thought the horse off the last race maybe a little more interesting, and maybe at a little bit of not much of a price, but it'll be a little bit better than Critical Data.
Yeah. Now for value, and I was just a little bit chicken to pick him. I was on the phone last night with Sean and Joe, who are back home in Virginia and Maryland, respectively. I talked a lot about Whitman's Poetry, and I really wanted to pick him. I didn't, but I think he could be the value in here. He shows two races where, you know, he lost a rider or did not finish up here last summer. If you have time, like, look at the replays and look at those races. Not really the fault of the horse, not necessarily the fault of the rider either. Mikey Mitchell, of course, the best, probably one of the best two jump jocks we have here in the U.S. You know, he clipped heels on one. He was in tight a little bit. Kind of the fence came up on him a little bit quick in the one race. He was behind horses, and all of a sudden he just kind of ran right into the fence in the second time that he lost the rider. You know, other than those two runs, his jump form is very, very good. I mean, he's a 9-year-old, so, you know, he's getting up there. He's experienced. But, you know, he's Jack Fisher, and he's got to be considered, in my opinion. You know, he comes out of the same race as my top pick. You know, but he was only two lengths behind him. So check the board and look for the value.
And, you know, put a line through the two races up here last year, and kind of a line through the last one, and it's the seasonal debut. And as you said, it's not that bad because he's right behind the horse you and I are putting on top. But you draw a line through those. The races just prior are okay. And the two where he lost the jock here at Saratoga, he's 3-1 and 5-1.
Yeah.
You're going to get a lot better than that today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's 8-1 on the line. We'll have to see what he goes off at. I think Fast Car, who you mentioned, will probably take some money. You know, he's Robert LaPenta. He has a little bit of flat for him. You know, he spent a lot of money on him. Jack's going to put the blinkers on him. You know, Joe really analyzed the race at Great Meadow, and he did some TV analysis for the Great Meadow and the Middleburg races, and said the horse is a little bit erratic in those races. So we'll have to watch that. I mean, obviously he gets a nice quiet setting here today, like he had there. We'll have to see. You know, he's obviously a very talented horse, probably an athletic horse to bring that much money at the sales. There were a lot of people that probably liked him. And he gets Mikey Mitchell, who's kind of Jack's, like, number one go-to guy. But at the same time, Whitman's Poetry has Sean McDermott, who rode Snap Decision for Jack in the Kaiser last week. So certainly a combo that works as well. Yeah. It's an interesting race. It's a tough race. It's not a stake, but it's a good allowance race for the lone jump race this week. I like it. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm with you. I think it's a fun way to kick off the Wednesday card. Let's also go back to, first, let's remind people, Saratoga special, a little bit different this year, online, Wednesdays and Saturdays, right?
That's right. Wednesdays, Saturdays. Hopefully you can download them on Tuesday night and Friday night. We finished up last night relatively early. Jam-packed edition this week. You can download it at thisishorseracing.com. You can also go to thesaratogaspecial.com and download it. You know, we had a couple different features today. We had I did a feature on the new main track and sort of the changes that they've made to the main track. I spent like an afternoon with Glenn Kozak riding around on the golf cart, and he showed me all different parts of things, and some people made some comments that they'd never seen an article, never been so interested in dirt and sand and clay in their whole lives. But it was a great learning experience, and I tried to explain it the best I could for sort of the general racing fan, or even horsemen in general. Got a lot of positive comments from a lot of horsemen about the track. So you can read the story. Steve Asmussen's got a great quote in there. Talked to him last week prior to the Vanderbilt about the main track. And we had another feature that one of our interns, Mary Eddy, who's a new intern for us, did a story about the folks that gather outside the Oklahoma track every day to watch the horses train. She went over and spent a little time with them and wrote a piece about it that was pretty entertaining as well. We recap all the action from the weekend, Vanderbilt, Boston Spa. Sean caught up with Kevin Attard from Starship Jubilee and his connections. So that was kind of a cool piece. And then Joe and Sean both had columns in this one that are very entertaining and pretty good. Yeah, Sean's columns about Keith Asmussen winning his first race as a jockey and talking to Steve and Keith about
Which was just the other day.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sunday. Sunday.
Sunday, yeah. So Steve was here on Saturday winning the Vanderbilt, and then the next day he's there celebrating his son's first win.
And there's some great pictures.
I saw those pictures. Yeah. I know. It was great. And, you know, we're like the Asmussen special now. We had a lot of stuff. So,
and people may not remember.
Yeah.
You know, you look at him now, it's hard to believe. Steve Asmussen started his career as a jockey.
That's right. That's right.
Two or three years. Mm-hmm. I looked it up last night. 750 rides, I think. Maybe 68 wins, something like that. And then for younger folks who are maybe new to the game, Keith's uncle, Steve's brother, Cash Asmussen, one of the really top jockeys in the world. And he was at the Eclipse Apprentice winner here in the 80s, I guess. But really, his career was made when he went over to Europe.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the Europeans, one of the best European jockeys of his era, for sure. Yeah. And still very active in the horse business with his family's business. And, you know, you see him from time to time. His name actually pops up every year on the consideration for the Hall of Fame. If people are suggested or they previously nominated, they will show up on the consideration ballot, I guess, and not necessarily the final ballot. So, you know, his name is still out there. The Asmussen name, of course, is everywhere. And now, young Keith Asmussen, now the latest winner in the family.
I read the articles in the press release from Lone Star, and he's a student at University of Texas, and this is kind of his summer thing.
I know.
Earning a little extra money for school.
Yeah.
Right?
Sean's column gets into it, how he came to sort of make an agreement with mom and dad about riding in the races, and it's cool. It's kind of a cool story.
And I got to read the one on the track, because the resurfaced track, as you say, has been getting some good reviews and whatnot. Also, we just showed the website there, and it was kind of cycling through the headlines. The Reader's Club, maybe tout that a little bit as well.
Yeah, so a couple years ago we started, 2 years ago, last summer we started. We've gotten into, a lot of people had reached out to us and said, you know, we really love your guys' paper. We want to support you. We feel like we need to give you something besides, you know, like a gift card or like gift certificates or dropping off beer at the office, which we always welcome. We don't have an office this year, but if you want to drop some of that off, just get in touch with me. I can figure out a way to take it. But but they're like, I don't want to buy an ad. I don't need to buy an ad. I can't necessarily afford to buy an ad. It sort of makes no sense. So we followed kind of a NPR model, a nonprofit, sort of these local weekly newspaper model, where they have sort of these loyalty programs or sort of like a membership kind of thing, like creating this community. So we created what we called the Reader's Club last year. It was $35. You got a nice Reader's Club sticker. We sent you a nice Reader's Club Saratoga special hat. And we put you on the early email list to get the email blast early when the issue is finished, so you'll get the first notice. And then we had other events that we were planning for this year. This was going to be our 20th season it still is our 20th season publishing the special. We had some cool events planned. We were trying to come up with like 40 events for the 40 days. And they were going to be anything from hey, why don't you meet us at the Saratoga State Park? We're going to go for a run or a walk, and that'll be the one of the events. Or we're going to go to the Brentwood across the street and go have happy hour, or Henry Street Tap Room, or, you know,
sure,
King's Tavern, or maybe have a party in the parking lot of our office. You know, we didn't clear that with Fasig Tipton yet, but we had a lot of plans made. But so we were like, well, let's continue. A lot of people reached out to us and said, are you guys doing the Reader's Club again? I need to re-up. So you can find all the information about the Reader's Club on there. On our website, thisishorseracing.com, and we have the Reader's Club back. You can also, you have a choice this year. You can get the Saratoga Special hat, or we have a buff sort of gator to kind of use your face mask for coronavirus, you know, facial covering. So that's a good option. They're not in yet. Hopefully people aren't getting anxious. We've gotten a lot of response so far to the Reader's Club, actually more this year than we had last year, which is great. Very appreciative of that. The net gators aren't in yet, but they're going to be here soon. Next time, hopefully, if I'm on again, I can bring one and show it. I don't know if it's going to be next time or whenever I'm going to be on, but
I'm in. I got my cap from last year, so I'll get one of the gators this year, and I'm willing to wait.
Well, we appreciate the support from you and from everybody. It's been an interesting year, and you know, money's tight, and we appreciate it. But
I know folks are fans of the Saratoga Special, and normally you pick it up either at the track or around town. A little bit different this year. The Wednesdays and Saturday editions, you get them online, thisishorseracing.com. But again, all the normal features in there, including the great handicapping, which is available every day on the website. John Sherpazian, I looked as you're coming on because I wanted to see where I fit in that mix. I'm feeling good. I'm only two behind Sherpazian. Well, he's got 35. I've got 33. You're sitting there with 31 winners on top. So I'm feeling pretty good. I think we're all doing pretty well. With
I think
90,
we are.
92 races so far.
Yeah.
Not
bad. 9 days in, right?
Yeah.
John is he's tough, man. I mean, I was ahead of him for 2 days, I think, which was has always seems to be my claim to fame. It's not the first time that ever happened. But, man, it's like poking the bear. I mean, he just takes off. And, like, I'll look, and I'm like, wow, I had a good day. I had, like, four winners. That's pretty good, 40%. John had six. You know, I mean, he's batting almost 40% for the meet, which is pretty good from a sample of 90 races.
Absolutely.
And he's tough. And I looked at the picks today in today's edition of the special, and I'm like, man, I got some horses that are way different than John's. And I'm like, I'm probably going to have a bad day. yeah, like you said, we do the picks on days we don't do an edition, so Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. You can get them online, thisishorseracing.com. Usually have them up, try to put them up the night before, but definitely like in the morning. So like tomorrow's picks will be up, you know, 8 in the morning. So I got all three of the other guys' picks done for tomorrow already. So I'm the only one that's lacking. So, but I did bring the PPs for today. So
there you go.
I can study while I work a little bit this afternoon.
A little work while you're working.
Absolutely.
Tom, appreciate the visit as always and the thoughts on this afternoon's jump race.
Anytime.
Don't forget, thisishorseracing.com. That's your gateway to the 2020 Saratoga Special. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll have a visit with Tom Amello. A little bit later on, Maggie and Tom Morley. All of that right after this. Stay tuned. No track, no problem. There's no better place to follow the Saratoga race meet than Capital OTB and OTB TV. With our live TV shows from the Saratoga backstretch and our live remotes, all the information you need is right here. Each and every day of the Saratoga meet, we talk with all the top trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and racing personalities. So stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV this racing season and win more.
It. Watch me. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got a move that tells me what to do. If you don't, brothers and sisters, then you won't know what it's all about. Hey!
Welcome back to Racing Across America, live from the Saratoga Backstretch on this Wednesday morning. Again, with things being a little bit different and the limited access to the track this year, we're pre-taping some things. And yesterday, I was right across the street, the Brunswick Bed and Breakfast, talking to the innkeeper, Tom Amello, our friend, longtime co-host with Nick Kling of the Sunday Morning Track Facts program here on the network. This year, he's doing a blog for us here at CapitalOTB.com. So we talked a little bit of that, a little horse racing, a little innkeeping during the Corona era. All of that with Tom Amello. It's up next. We are live across the street from the track, the Brunswick Bed and Breakfast. We are on location, as it were, on the front porch with the proprietor, Tom Amello, and his family run the Brunswick Bed and Breakfast. And, of course, Tom, longtime host of Track Facts on Capital OTB TV and currently doing a blog on the website as well. Tom, good morning.
Good morning to you, Seth. Good morning, racing fans. It's just terrific to be back on the air. And you're right. We are sitting across from the reading room. And what I tell folks is, if I sneeze, the starter says, God bless you. We are that close. Not to belabor the point, it's a very strange Saratoga track season, although the city is busier than I really thought it would be. And I think all the venues that are providing super TVs and packages for folks, they've pretty much relocated the picnic area to a variety of venues around town, which is great for the locals. I don't know how many out-of-towners are going to ship in for that kind of experience.
That brings me to, because before I talk about horse racing, I wanted to get a little bit to your other job here. As I say, you and your family handling the Brunswick Bed and Breakfast, and you can go to the website and check out the information, brunswickbb.com. But talk a little bit first about, as an innkeeper, how did the quarantine shutdown period go? And now that we've gotten into the season, how is this season different than other seasons here at the inn?
Well, what I frame it this way, Seth. Everyone in this country is in the same situation with respect to a pandemic and COVID-19, but nobody's really in the same situation. For example, I'm a bed and breakfast next to a restaurant. We were both closed. The restaurants were all closed. Hotels and accommodations were able to stay open if they applied for permits. We did not do that. As you all know, restaurants were able to take out and kind of generate some revenue. There's no takeout breakfast in the bed and breakfast business, and there's no beds that go. So, you know, the bottom line, we sent our last guests away in March. On March 19th, and they took home their Skidmore kids, and I don't think we had anybody in the house till mid-April. And when the phone rang, it was pretty much mostly concerned folks canceling, and we canceled, regrettably, for them, not for us. Everybody got a refund, and that's the way it is. We did not apply for any government funding for two reasons. One, we didn't want to increase our debt. And second, the way our business is, we have more part-time than full-time. And so any program that's designed to keep people on a payroll really wasn't something that would help us or would be good for us. So in that regard, we're hoping that our lenders are really friendly guys. I'll tell you this. In February, I called my main banker, and I asked, so listen, I spent 30 years teaching. I'm now running a bed and breakfast, and the world's coming to a catastrophe. What do you guys do with the money you have on your books? And he went, ahama, ahama, ahama. But they've been good. They're working with us. And, we're expecting to come out of this hole. And we hope that folks both regionally and outside the area continue to come to Saratoga. The city does a great job of promoting it. And we'll give you a bed and breakfast hospitality experience you've never had. And while we're on it, the last thing, if you read my blog, at the bottom of the blog, there's a blurb that if you are OTB, if you're watching OTB and you want to stay at the Brunswick, we'll give you 1.5 for the price of 2. So stay one night, we'll give you 50% off the next. There are a few restrictions, but not too many these days. So there it is.
Well, we're certainly rooting for you and the rest of the businesses that, you know, have kind of plugged along. And I found it interesting. You alluded to it a few minutes ago. But the question mark was, what will the Saratoga season be like this year? And I found it interesting talking to people in the last, you know, first 2 weeks of the meet. The number of people that are coming in from out of town that like to come to Saratoga and are still coming, you know, it's clearly not the numbers you normally get, but there are still some people who are like, I like to be in Saratoga. I'm going to take my time up there, find a watch party, and get the Saratoga experience.
I've always talked about this 24-day, 36-day, 40-day meet for we who are in the region as a reunion. Now, there are a lot of folks who come and stay at a variety of places around town. They come at the same time of the year, Whitney, Alabama, Travers. They meet a group of friends, and it's like that movie, same time next year. They expect to see their friends. And it's kind of a confirmation that all is well in the world. Well, we have several of those folks coming. We're buying a big TV. We're not going to Pry, we're not going to Embassy. We're going to our dining room. And we're going to cheer here with our returning guests.
Yeah, we have the remotes. We did one opening weekend at Horseshoe, and we've been out at Prime already. Embassy, as you say, Diamond Club Grill, Bailey's, they have these watch parties. And I said it when I was at the Horseshoe. They've got the picnic table set up there, and I said, perfect venue for the people that normally sit in the backyard, don't see a horse anyway. And Prime, somebody related to me, they thought, well, that's kind of what you get in the Turf Terrace. You're eating dinner, and it's a little more upgraded from what you get at the picnic tables. And then a race goes, you look at the TV, you watch the race, and you continue dining.
Every racetrack has two things to sell, winning and being close. Saratoga is one of the few places in the country that has what it is and what it's like to sell in addition to that. And, you know, one of the interesting things to me, the gentleman in Rotterdam who built the backyard in his backyard. Well, like you just said, most of us really watch the, no matter where we are, we're watching it on a monitor. And I'm wondering if people are having so much time in backyard parties that they might say, what am I gonna make the drive up here? I says, don't even think about that because it's Saratoga. It's part of the culture of the region and what continues to make this the great experience it is. And, you know, we're making the best of it that we can this year.
And that's exactly it. I think people are making the best of it, but I think if and when, hopefully, we're back to normal next year, I think they'll knock down the gates. Let's talk a little bit about the racing side of things and fill us in on what you have on CapitalOTB.com this summer as far as Saratoga with the blog.
What I do with the blog, I'm charged with looking at the Friday, Saturday stakes races. If I get all the information I need in time for the Friday post, okay? And you know my philosophy. I honestly think that the race has to go through whoever David Aragona says is the morning line favorite. And I don't care what track you are. I honestly think that's where folks should start. So what I do in the blog is I'll list them in order from the favorite on up. Really trying just to narrow in on the contention. I won't do all the horses. I rarely leave out a horse who jumps up and wins. So it's a brief narrative of how the horse is coming into the race, how the race seems to shape up. For example, Starship Jubilee. I was against Starship Jubilee for one reason. She's only had one win outside of Woodbine and Gulfstream Park. Now, she got her best distance. We were guaranteed short odds on
Sister Charlie,
but that wasn't her best distance. And so you have that kind of conversation to give people something to think about. And that's the format, and that's what we do.
It'll go up on Fridays?
I get it to Charles. Sir Charles, I call him. I get it to Sir Charles either Thursday night or early Friday morning, and he gets it up as early as he can.
So you can check that out throughout the meet. CapitalOTB.com. And Tom, you and I were on the phone last week talking, and I'd love to hit on this as well, because we talked about the $90-plus dollar winner last Wednesday, Manifest Destiny, and you kind of brought up some great points that are good at this meet and good for folks who are maybe new to handicapping, because it brought up things that aren't on the page. If you're willing to take a little time and do a deep dive, maybe you can come up with a $90 winner occasionally.
Manifest Destiny. A big prize here. A huge prize here. Big balloons on Manifest Destiny. 45-1.
Well, you know, the lament, the question is, how the hell did you have that horse? Or where did you find that horse? What gave you a reason to use the horse? Well, when Manifest Destiny, trained by William Youngins, crossed the finish line and I shook my head, I went and did the work that when I was younger I might have done. That's all I'm going to tell you. And you could do it nowadays because you got Formulator and Stats Race Lens. You can go back and look at Lifetime PP.
You don't have to have that 3-foot pile of daily racing form. Hey, we all did.
We all did. Seth, I had, when I stopped doing it, I had 1,200 5x8 cards and I had cut out 10 line chunks of past performances, so I had Lifetime PP. Hi folks, I'm crazy. Anyhow, so Manifest Destiny had 38 Lifetime starts. Now the most interesting thing for this horse, prior to his win here, he only had 5 wins. Mark Kramer wrote a great book called Thoroughbred Cycle. You can still find it. And in Thoroughbred Cycles, he talked about, how do you find a horse who might have a chance of running better than odds? He called that horse the Renaissance horse. Now the Renaissance horse is a horse who broke his maiden somewhere and then disappeared. And then he comes back and he shows up and maybe he runs a big race at big odds. Now everybody knows he's not a very good horse. And so you throw him out next time. And then he comes back, he runs a second race at Big Balloons and wins. Then he goes back to Palookaville. And maybe 8 or 10 races later, he comes back, shows a little life, and boom, you get him again. And so, Mark used to teach that long shot horses who pay big odds, usually do it more than once. When you're looking for a 4-to-1 shot to win it 20-to-1, they don't do that because they're used to being, they come in and out of form as 4-to-1 shot. So let me recount to you, and I'll give you this to take with you. First of all, William Youngins has 101 starts in Naira, 5 wins, 6 seconds, and 5 shows. 5 of the wins, 5 of the wins, and 1 of the second. That was Manifest Destiny. Hello. So this is Manifest Destiny. In June of 2016 at Belmont, breaks his maiden at 6.5 under Rosario at 11-1. Okay, 10 races later, he's at Saratoga, he goes a mile, and he wins at 31-1. Okay, comes back the next race in 9-1-1 New York bred. I'm sorry, he's second at 60-1, excuse me. Comes back the next race and wins at 11-1. Okay, so it took 10 races for him to find himself again. Meanwhile, Bruce Brown claims the horse. Can't get him to the winner's circle or the money. Okay? Jim Ryerson has the horse. He can't get the horse anywhere. Rudy Rodriguez has the horse, gets him to win under IRAD, pays $4. Okay? 2 races back, William Youngins claimed him back.
Which automatically
claimed him back.
Well,
the reclaim. You go, what the heck? And the reclaim only makes sense in the context of the Lifetime. So, on June 4th at Belmont, going 6 furlongs against 25,000 claimers, finishes 7th, beating 14 lengths at 65-1. Hello, here we are at Saratoga, and he goes off at 45-1 and gets a good inside trip and gets up. This is the quintessential Renaissance horse. Now, I talked this over with my friend the Wizard, and Michael said that this guy ought to be in the Hall of Fame for the most significant number of putovers with the same animal. And I would love to meet William Youngins and shake his hand. Now, one last thing. I tell this story all the time. My father loved a Johnny Campbell horse named Peckaboo Baby. Ran 104 times, and my pops had him all 4 times because he was always due. If he knew Manifest Destiny, he'd have had a couple of those.
Very good. And again, the information is out there. It's not on the page. That's how you get prices like this. I remember, do you remember the book? This years ago, Ray Kearson, the Post, wrote about it, so I bought a copy. The Dot System?
Yeah.
And for folks who aren't familiar, and I don't think you could do it now because it was based on those consensus boxes in the Post, the Daily News, the Racing Form. So you needed 10 or 12 handicappers, but you print up a page with the entries, and anytime one of the handicappers mentioned a horse, you put a dot next to its name in a race. And you'd be surprised how few times there were horses in a race that didn't have any dots. You would think, oh, three or four in every race won't get, but no, if you got 10 or 12 handicappers. And so there was a chapter in the book that talked about the no-dot horse.
That
it was always kind of, they won't come in all the time, but clearly the trainer knows something. He's looking at the rest of the field, and so to put the horse in and take a shot, he must know something. And if that was still a doable thing, to tie it in with that, because now you could take the no dot and look up and kind of maybe find, because I would guess that may have been a no dot horse.
You're right. What I regularly do, because again, I use Formulator. If there's a horse with 25 or 30 lifetime wins, because you're only looking most of the time at 10 or 12. So I might go back just to see, you know, did he break his maiden on debut? That means maybe he can win off a layoff. Did it take him 10 races? And then what happened? So you know, we learn that whenever they post the PPs of the great horses. When they posted Cigar, and you've seen that PP.
Yeah.
You look at that and you go, my God, he won almost every race the same way. So there are some horses who, if it looks like they're going to get their trip, but they're being ignored, you know, how can, we often ask, how can this horse win? Sometimes you got to ask, how can these favorites lose?
And just before we let you go, I also want to touch on, because we've talked about it before, and we don't have the time to get into it in depth again, but can people find it online and just go over once again? You've got the nice pamphlet, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, looking at the odds board and kind of making decisions about that.
I appreciate you bringing it up. I got a book that it's called Playing the Odds Board, Gateway to the Game. If anybody's interested in that, you can contact me through OTB or through, you know, social media, Twitter, whatever it is, and we'll find a way to get you that if you want it. The bottom line is this. The winners are usually located among the first four live odds choices, okay? And when you go outside those four, you have to have an opinion. Okay? Otherwise, pretty much, we're all looking at and making contenders out of the same horses. What we do differently is rank them, you know, which is what the dot system was. The dot system was consensus based on ranking. And so, you know, what that will do is it'll always keep you on live horses. So, you know, what I teach and what I talk about all the time, it's a game of opinion. And if you don't have an opinion, you're playing lotto. Well, that's okay. You can have fun playing lotto. I'll give you the lotto example. I had a friend, every time the day was the 13th or the 31st, he bet 10 races boxing 1-3. That was his lottery. That's what he did on the unlucky day and on the only, what how many months have 31, right? So. And you can have a lot of fun doing that and not waste time looking up this stuff.
Also, I want to ask you, because you showed me the win photo as well, and I just have to ask you, you know how much fun it is, as I do, to go over and win a nice bet, but tell me, because I have not experienced this, what it's like to step in the winner's circle, and talk about that last year. Street Trust.
And then Street Trust, who swings up on the far outside, they're into the stretch. And it is Halloween Horror, Heavy Roller coming up the rail. On the far outside, Street Trust trying to get involved too. It is Heavy Roller in front, Street Trust gaining ground on the outside. These two, Jose Ortiz trying to keep Heavy Roller going. Street Trust and Joel Rosario full out making a race of it as they come down to the wire. And it is very close.
Street Trust, Michael Kipnis, the wizard, owns a couple of horses, and he has been trying to find one that he thought would fit a spot here. Well, he found one last year. The horse was racing, you know, on the Midwest circuit. I think he had him in Florida for a couple of races. But what he needed was a 35,000 claimer on the turf with a chance that it would come off, because the horse ran even numbers, if not a little better, on the wet. So we got down on closing day. He shipped the horse in 2 weeks early into Pat Reynolds, excellent trainer who just doesn't get a lot of horses. Great guy. Actually, Pat Reynolds and I graduated from the same high school. I didn't even know that. Anyhow, Rosario's named to ride. And the comedy is Wiz goes into the paddock to give him the instructions. I don't know exactly what he said. And the race scratches down to five horses over a muddy track, and we're the lone closer. The lone closer. And Rosario gave the horse a great ride, and he gets up at the wire, and in the photo, you can only see eight legs and a lip. Okay, so we get the win. He was the longest shot on the board in the five horse field, and we get that. And I own a very small piece, but the whole thing of going over and getting to sit in the box and hoping, right, and then having it happen, and you get to get down to the winner's circle, is just, you can't bottle it. I got chills now. If they could bottle that, you know, there are a couple things they got to bottle. And I'll say this too. You know, Terry Finley, West Point Thoroughbreds, Tommy Bellhouse, they're our good friends. They do great things. They get a lot of people in the game. They got that ad going with Sherm, the owner, calling in to Richie Cristiano's office and giving the call of the race. You got to bottle that because that's what the game is. It's you and me sitting on the porch here laughing and then going over there and laughing. It's fantastic.
Yeah, there's no question about it. It's different this year. Hopefully, you know, knock wood, things come back to normal next year. But, Tom, always great to sit down, talk a little horse racing with you. But also, before we go, just one more time, if folks want to stop by, BrunswickBB.com is the website. They can check that out. And you're good to go. So talk a little bit about
the short trip. We love
staycation.
We love folks who are either want to get away from their kids, because they love them so much, they need to get away, or people want to come and visit them. I tell them, give them your house, come and stay with us. They do that quite often. Y'all have a great day and a great day at the races, and make the most out of the best season we can have.
Tom, appreciate it. Again, this is the Brunswick B&B, literally right across the street from Union Avenue from the racetrack. Tom, appreciate the time.
Thank you very much.
All right, we'll be back in a few. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
All right, let's jump right into it. As noted earlier, Gary Contessa going to join in Capital OTB TV this summer. He'll be doing some taped pieces for us, as again, things are a little bit different as to how we're gathering content this year. But first up for the Gary Contessa pieces, he met the other day, I guess, in the backyard with Maggie and Tom Morley. So up next, Gary Contessa and the Morleys.
Gary Contessa. And today I'm sitting here with Tom Morley and his beautiful wife, Maggie, and we're going to hear a little bit about their life. I'm not here to ask them about their horses and who we can bet on. I'm here to hear about the real people, the real Maggie, the real Tom Morley, what life is like together, their beautiful children, and just hear a little bit more about their life that you probably didn't know. So that's the agenda for today. Tom Morley and Maggie Morley Wolfendale. Okay. Tom Morley and Maggie. Everybody knows you guys as the paddock personality and the trainer. Tell us, how did you two meet?
We met here, funnily enough. I had come to New York for the first time with Eddie Keneally String. I was Brendan Walsh's foreman. We bought 25 horses up here. And I think Maggie was galloping for Linda Rice at the time.
No, Leah.
Oh, Leah Giamatti, sorry. and I spotted her one day on the Oklahoma training track, and it took quite a lot. Took quite a long time for the chase to be successful, but certainly the chase was on at that point.
Did she shut you down pretty good at first?
Let's put it this way: it took until Halloween until she talked to me. So it was it took a while. Yeah.
Wow. Well, it was worth it, right?
Yeah. Yes.
You two have two beautiful kids. I mean, two of the most beautiful kids. They should be like Gerber babies. And let me ask something: what's it like juggling the kids and the relationship and the paddock? And you're always on call to do different shows, and Tom, you're back and forth to Belmont. What's it like? What's the juggling the family like? How tough is that for you guys?
I think we like challenges is basically what I would surmise about it. Is it's tough. I mean, I'm lucky enough when we're downstate to have my mom helping us. Lucky enough to have a very supportive husband to help out whenever with the kids. And it's a juggling act, like you said. So, but they're great kids, you know. Grace has grown up traveling up and down, whether it be New Orleans, whether it be here to Saratoga. I mean, she's been everywhere. So Willow, she's got a lot to learn from her big sis.
Right, and she's going to have a great support team there in her.
Yeah.
She told me she loves her sister. So, Tom, you, when did you, like, you're obviously born in England?
Yeah.
Tell us about your travels here. Like, what brought you to the United States to train horses?
A mixture of things, Gary. I've been involved. A lot of my family's involved in racing in England, in the breeding side and in the racing side. And in the administration side as well. So I've been surrounded by horsemen and racing people all my life. And I decided probably at about the age of 12 that actually I only had one thing that I wanted to do in life, and that was to train racehorses. And that was from spending summers with my uncle David in his yard at Newmarket. He was a multiple Group 1 winning trainer on the flat and over fences as well. And my brothers have always said I'm the luckiest of the five boys because I've always known what I wanted to do. And I suppose that's a very, very good point. Not many 12-year-olds already know what they want to do with their life. Spent some summer jobs in England and racing stables and stud farms. And then I was lucky enough when I graduated from university to get on the Darley Flying Start program, or what is now the Godolphin Flying Start, two-year management trainee program. Sponsored entirely by Sheikh Mohammed, so owe him an enormous debt of gratitude. But that afforded me the opportunity to travel in the industry as well, starting in Ireland, England, then Australia, America, and Dubai, and then back to Europe to graduate from the program. I went straight to Newmarket to work for Jeremy Nazida for 4.5 years as his assistant. And again, Jeremy is obviously started training in California himself, and so America was a very, very big deal to us, even though we were based in Newmarket. And he'd obviously won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile with Wilco, and we brought Awesome Act over to win the Gotham on his first start on dirt. He went to the Derby, so, and we won two divisions of the Jamaica while I worked for him. So although I was based in Newmarket, I was exposed to American racing a lot. And at the end of my time with Jeremy, he suggested that I come here for 18 months work experience, get a job in a barn here, learn the American way of doing things before going home and starting training. I followed the first piece of advice. I came to America, I went to Eddie Keneally's, and I never left.
And how old were you at that point?
I was 27 or 28 when I came to America, yeah.
So Jeremy surely missed you. I've I've scouted horses at the American Sales for Jeremy for many years, probably 10, 15 years, and I really have a lot of, I really like him. I know he retired from training, and he's just been a good guy. I've always admired him.
He is without a doubt the best racehorse trainer that I've ever been lucky enough to work for, and that says an awful lot because I've worked for some very, very good trainers. Now, he was exceptional at conditioning horses for anything from 5 furlong sprint races to winning the St. Ledger with 60s Icon while I was there.
Would you ever consider, or is it a desire maybe on your bucket list, to, if you have the right horse, to go back and win at Newmarket or go back and win
absolutely.
At Royal Ascot?
Absolutely. It was certainly a part of the game plan with Carrick that we would try and take him back as an older horse to Royal Ascot or to York. York in August is my favorite race meeting of anywhere on earth. I'm a Yorkshireman through and through, and that's a 30, 40,000 person crowd for 3 days, and they are there for the horses and to have a great time. And so, you know, the Nunthorpe and the International are two tremendously prestigious races there. So, yeah, but you've got to have the right horse. I mean, you look at what Graham did at Royal Ascot this year. He knew how good Sharing was, and he had the guts to take her over there, and she ran her eyeballs out. And I think the whole of that team feel that now Ocean Murphy had one ride on her, he thinks he'd win that race given a second go at it.
Right, right. I mean, it's big. I tried to go there with Manhattan Dan a few years ago, and everything has to fall in place.
Yeah.
So many plans and so many things that could stop it from happening.
Yeah.
Maggie, you too grew up in this business. I knew of your dad, but I didn't know him personally. But what was it like growing up? The daughter of a horse trainer, what was it like going through high school? What was your life like back then?
Well, my dad, you know, a lot of people say, well, you must have been a daddy's girl or something like that. Not the case whatsoever. But lucky enough that my mom totally involved in the horses as well. So I was immersed in it, you know, from the time I was born. I was riding the lead pony at the age of 2 around the shed row. So I learned a lot from my dad through example and observation about horses and stuff like that, as far as, you know, training them and what to look for, because he's a man of very few words. He enjoyed mostly being with the horses and working on them, being in the stalls and watching them train every day. But my mom, she's the one who taught me how to ride. And for me growing up, where I did, it wasn't celebrated to be involved in horses. I was kind of looked at, you know, as this girl who was rich because I rode horses. Little did they know I was poor because we had horses, and that's how we made a living.
People don't understand
exactly.
That. They think if you have a horse, you have money. That's the
money's got four legs. It's in the field over there.
Right.
There's no money.
Eat your money.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I loved showing horses as well. I've always been involved in a very big proponent of OTTBs, taking horses off the track and retraining them. So that's kind of what I grew up doing as a teenager. And then fell into galloping horses because that's what I needed to do to make money to get through college.
Right. Did you, when you were in high school and college, are you thinking, I'm going to be a trainer when I get out? Or what is your mindset? What are you thinking when you're going through schooling?
Absolutely not. I knew, being the daughter of a trainer, I did not want to train. Always plan B if I needed it. Got my trainer's license when I was 21. Thought, now what can I do in this industry where I can earn a paycheck every week, you know, and have a dependable income? But two, I loved growing up watching the people on air and handicapping and reading a forum and all that. So it's really, my job now is just the perfect combination of all the things I love about the industry and what I love to do, you know, for a profession.
She gets the stress of being a trainer anyway, if she's married one.
No kidding. What a perfect, like I said in the very beginning, you guys are the perfect power couple, the trainer, the paddock personality, and you get to ride that roller coaster, Maggie.
Yep.
But one day, you know, I'm training horses at Belmont, mm-hmm. and one day I look up and you're standing there. What brought you from Maryland to New York? How did that happen?
When I graduated college, Towson University, I made a reel, a resume, and sent it out to every track and every TV network, TVG as well, in the country. And Andy Serling had joined the NYRA at that point a couple years prior, and Jan had retired, Jan Rushton. And they were kind of looking for somebody to fulfill that position, and came along, came across Dan Silver's desk, my package, and Andy and him called me with interest for me to come up to New York, and I started actually interning here at Saratoga in the press office, and then they kind of offered me a job at the end of that, and you know, the snowball effect just went to Belmont and then went on air at the end of the Belmont meet in 2010.
Well, kudos to the NYRA management person who picked you, because it seems like a match made in heaven. I think you do a fantastic job, and your knowledge really helps a lot of people out there. I really like to see that. Are you still galloping horses?
When I'm needed.
Does that make you nervous, Tom?
No, not at all.
Come on.
Not at all.
I need to get this one.
I'm probably not the kindest guy in the world to her in those situations, because when I need someone, then she gets called in and she has to get on five, and then it might be 2 months until she's asked to do it again.
So I'm very sore whenever I gallop a horse now.
Do you guys... Is there any tension between your two jobs? Like, if you want to, do you ever call him out on one of his horses on air?
And you can take
Go home and say, what's that for?
No.
And I'll tell you a very interesting story about it. She is so good at what she does that actually, and these are not my words, these are the words of Jimmy Jerkins, and this is a text he sent me yesterday. 99 times out of 100, if Maggie says something about my horse, I go back to the barn, I look at it, and she's absolutely right. He just sent me a text in the middle of the afternoon yesterday, and it made me think about it. And 99, I ran a horse at Belmont, and she called him out for being fat in the paddock. Now, he won, but in one more stride, he would have been beaten. He blew for 37 minutes after the race, and he lost 10 pounds and brought him up here. He was an older horse, hadn't run due to the pandemic, and...
Right.
He got tired at the end of the race, you have to be able. Maggie's job is not to give us trainers a pat on the back. She is there for the general public and the punter, and to give her opinion on the horse flesh in front of us, not to make us feel good.
Good, I like that.
And he's great, because once we come home, all work is totally pushed aside. Now, granted, we'll talk about horses. You know, we'll talk about a horse that ran, or you know, horses that have run big races and that, but it's never any tension like that. So
right, do you ever come home and say, Tom, can you believe what happened today?
Of
course, right?
Oh yeah.
And I'm sure those stories are fantastic as well.
Absolutely.
Wow. Well, that's good, because one time, I'll be honest with you, one time as a trainer, Maggie called out on one of my horses, and I was incensed because I didn't agree. But from that moment on, I got to be honest with you, every time you called out one of my horses, I went back there and said, take that horse out. I want to have a look at that. Because I started to realize how good your opinion was.
Well, I really appreciate that.
I really did.
Absolutely.
But at first, it hit me like a brick.
Sure, I understand. I get it. I totally get it. And look, I can, being in New York for as long as I can, I've developed that thick skin. And
right.
And you have a right to be angry or upset, because it's not easy to hear. And plus, your horses are your pets. Not pets per se, but they're your pride and joy. You know,
right.
that's your lifeblood, your work that you're putting out there, and somebody's critiquing it. So it's always going to be
difficult thing, I think, as a trainer, a hands-on trainer like you are and I am, is you see them every single day. And it's amazing how you come up here, you train and race for 4 days, you go back to Belmont, and you're like, God, that two-year-old's changed. And
right.
You've only been away 4 days, and actually he's been changing in front of your eyes, and you just haven't seen it. But when you walk away for 4 days and you come back and you go, Christ alive, he's backward, or what? That horse has turned inside out. So it's tougher for us to see that change when you're seeing them on a daily basis, whereas Maggie might only see them once every 3-4 weeks when they come into the paddock, and the change is very noticeable then.
And you make a great point about that, because I'm sure you see those changes for the better.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you go back to Belmont and you see changes for the worse.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, I got to improve something here. This horse isn't right. He's trying to tell me something.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a great way to be. And I think everybody appreciates your opinion, Maggie.
Thank you.
Let me be the first to say it, but I'm sure you hear it every day, but I think it's great. What's it like to work with Andy Serling?
Boom. Boom, boom. Look, okay. Andy, I can't, And he's the one who hired me. I mean, he's the one who really brought me on the team. And I know people watching, you know, from at the television, watching him on TV, he can be a tough pill to swallow, but he's also very entertaining. That's kind of his thing, you know. But for me, working with him personally, there were some rough times in the beginning because Andy does, he's a perfectionist himself, and he expects that from you. And there was some fine-tuning, some grooming for me to be done. And, you know, he would be tough on me, but I learned from it. And then it got to a point where I was like, man, I know what I'm doing. And then I give it back to him. And then he kind of like respected that in the way. But at the end of the day, besides work, Andy is a great friend. I mean, when I was still pregnant with Willow, 41 weeks and a day, carrying her, I mean, he was checking in on me every single day and always asked how the girls are. His mother knits them sweaters and gives them gifts. And, you know, Andy truly has a heart of gold.
I don't think that my next guest needs any introduction. Everybody knows my partner in crime, and while we've sort of grown as a team at Belmont and Saratoga, I feel like Maggie, and of course Maggie Wolfendale, we are the core, right, Maggie? You and me. It's
yes.
You and me, babe.
The originals.
That's right. You have been stuck with me. Is it 9 years or 10 years now?
It's, well, 9 years on air. I did come to work here in 2010. Well, so this is my 10th.
You started at Belmont in like late September, early October.
Right.
So it's almost 9 years.
Yeah.
Does it feel like that long?
Some days, yes.
she does work with me.
Well, I can't thank you enough for this interview. You guys, this is my maiden voyage, as I told you, and I hope it went well. I hope it was as easy for you guys as it was for me.
Very.
I got one last question for you. In as few words as possible, describe Saratoga 2020.
Ghostly.
Lonely.
Ghostly and lonely. I concur. Thank you so much,
thank
Maggie.
You.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank
and
you,
those
Gary.
Beautiful kids. Love them. So this is Gary Contessa signing off today with Capital OTB, and we'll see you more. We'll have plenty of these for you.
And again, the kickoff to our Gary Contessa pieces that we'll be featuring throughout the season up here. Thanks to Gary for going out. Mick Richards was out with the camera and the editing, so thanks to Mick as well. And, of course, thanks to Maggie and Tom Morley for taking the time. A little bit earlier, thanks to our friend Tom Amello for his time. I went and taped him yesterday across the street at the Brunswick. And, of course, thanks to Tom Law, top of the show, Saratoga special, talking a little bit about the jumps today and some other news around the track as well. Don't forget Saratoga special this year. Pick it up online. This is horseracing.com. New edition every Wednesday and Saturday. All right, don't forget double promotion today at the Clubhouse Racebook, Knockout Challenge, and a match bet. That comes up today at the Clubhouse Racebook. So swing by, enjoy the racing action down there. And the double promotion. I'm going to wrap things up for this edition of Racing Across America. Oh, I do want to remind you also, Thoroughbred Racing tonight. Keep that in mind. A lot of great action. Colonial Downs, some of the other nighttime tracks that's available tonight. Capital OTB TV and CapitalOTBBet.com. Going to wrap it up, though, for Racing Across America for a Wednesday morning. Kicking off week number 3. Wish you a lot of luck this afternoon betting. Hopefully you make a lot of money. And we see you back here tomorrow morning to do it all again. We'll be back in tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. for the handicapper support. I'll be back at 10 a.m. for Racing Across America. So wrapping it up for this Wednesday edition of Racing Across America. Back in tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. with the handicapper support. See you then.
Watching Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier online wagering site in New York State. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit LeahCars.com. Leah Cars for life. And the new Capital OTB mobile app. Wager anytime, anywhere. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.